Welcome to the Pick Place Podcast, a show where we talk about electronics manufacturing and everything related to getting the circuit board into the world. This is Chris Denny with Worthington.
And this is Melissa Ho with Circuit Hub.
Welcome back, Melissa.
Welcome back, Chris. And we're back on a schedule.
So. Yes, thank you for getting us on schedule.
You're welcome. I'll do my best. Otherwise,
Lord knows it would not happen alone.
Yeah.
So that is the exasperated sigh of a mother who's frustrated with her podcasting partner not keeping up with his responsibilities. Sorry, Melissa.
It's all right. It's all good.
Well, I'm halfway through listening to our episode with Tom. That was great. I enjoyed that. He's a good interview. Actually, no, I think I did finish it. No, I did finish it because I remember his pet peeve. Do you remember his pet peeve?
Yes.
Pet peeve. Mm-hmm. His pet bee named Peeve. It was good. That was fun. He was a good time. So if you haven't listened to that episode, listen back to it. And I think you'll enjoy it. Some good topics in there. Mm-hmm. What's the topic this week, Melissa?
Today's topic is catching up with Chris.
Oh, yeah. And this is only because while Melissa has been focused on one super highly important task for a long time, I've been working for marginally important tasks, but many of them over the course of time. So more to explain than just, you know, keeping tiny human alive.
Yes, baby. I had a baby, if you're just listening in, and now I'm back to work.
And she's amazing. And she's so stinking cute. And she is the best behaved baby that has ever existed, ever.
No.
She sat in on a 3-hour sales meeting the other day and didn't say a word the whole time. And she was awake. She wasn't even asleep.
Because of many paces.
Yes. Mom was working hard to keep her that way.
She's pretty good.
Excellent job. So good mom, good baby is a quiet sales meeting. And it was very productive.
Yeah, it was. I was going to get into that, but I guess I'll be going backwards to...
That's okay. Let's do this. What was that Christopher Nolan movie? Tenet. Let's do it Tenet style. Okay. Start from the end.
Yeah. So, we basically wanted to do this episode because I wanted to familiarize myself with everything that has been going on.
And you're just getting back like this week or last week. Is that right?
Yeah. This is, I think, the second week or third week. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Mom brain.
Time eludes me. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Less gray matter. Definitely.
So it's been a while. It's been a while. So all the way from April. Okay. All right. So yeah, a lot to catch up on.
Yeah.
That's why we wanted to do the episode.
Figured the listeners might be interested listening to this as well. So we had our whole sales team, Circuit Hub sales team. We have about a third of them are in London. So we actually had our whole sales team over in our factory this past week. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was really great, I think.
It really was great.
Some of them hadn't ever been to the factory, so that's just like a wonderful experience, being able to actually understand firsthand all the problems going on.
Problems? I'm sorry. I'm not sure I'm familiar with this word. Problem? What problems going on?
Oh, goodness.
No, but I agree. Just to like, well, from their perspective, just to understand how it's done.
Yeah.
You know, first of all,
not problems, just challenges.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was joking, Melissa, obviously. Yeah. Like there's problems, but it's like good to like go, oh, that's why that's a problem. I know you complain.
Yeah, that's why we can't do this. That's why we say no to this, or that's why that's actually difficult and we don't want to do this.
So now instead of me always telling them, no, we can't do that, they'll go back to their customers and say, are you crazy? No, we can't do that.
Yeah.
I've been to the factory. I know how difficult that is. Yeah. Well, it's not that it's difficult. It's just that we're not equipped for it, right? So like one of the things we talk about quite a bit is like conformal coating. We're just not equipped to handle conformal coating yet. We don't have all the right technology and everything. And so in-house. We partner in-house. So there's a super professional conformal coating contractor just down the road from us. I mean, they're maybe 30 minutes away. 45 minutes away maybe. And that's all they do is conformal coating. Like that's all they do. And so we found it easier to partner with them rather than do it in-house. And now by bringing the sales team in, they got to see, you know, how difficult it is and why it made sense to outsource that for a while. I mean, eventually we do want to bring it in-house, obviously. What was also nice about having them out is seeing everything sort of through their eyes, like, mm-hmm. and just seeing their experience of it. So I didn't get to spend all my time with them while they were doing their tour. And for those of the audience that aren't aware, like when we do tours of our factory, we call it a self-guided tour. And it's not that you're just walking around the factory reading a plaque that explains the area. You're like, each person in the factory is explaining what they do and why they do it a certain way and what value they're adding to the product. And it's awesome. As opposed to, I remember when I was working at another contract manufacturer, the owners or the sales manager would take potential customers or other people through the factory, and you just sat there and kept working. It was kind of awkward and strange, you know. You didn't get mm-hmm. to interact yeah. with the people walking through. And so initially at Worthington, that's how we did it too. Like, I would do the tours and I'd feel super uncomfortable giving a tour and like not like introducing anybody, you know, just it was weird. And
yeah, that is really awkward.
It is.
You know, it's awkward for both parties too.
Yes.
Because you're just like watching someone do their work and they're pretending like you aren't there. And
exactly. And then Neil and Rafael, the owners of Worthington, are like, just let them walk around. And the person knows how to explain it. Just have them explain it. And then they'll show them to the next person that explain what they do next. Then just have them walk around the factories. Simple. So that's how we do it now. But I would follow that. I followed the sales team for part of it and just listened. I would just kind of stand back because I had never really taken it myself. And I know by just being present, it's going to change how the factory tour is normally done, because maybe they'll speak differently knowing that I'm listening, as opposed to it's like, all right, that's an unfortunate consequence. But it was great. Like, it was great to just like observe it and then just to see the sales team like light up every time a connection was made. You know, it was like, oh, that's why ABC, you know, or, oh, you're so-and-so, I've talked to you 100 times and this is the real person, you know, it's so great to meet you, kind of a thing. That was super cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, great. And then we had a great meeting. We talked about all kinds of things, goals, what we're trying to achieve, not just like sales goals and like financial targets, but like capabilities and mm-hmm. capacity and user experience and how to make the software better for customers and that kind of stuff. So it was awesome. Yeah. It was a really great meeting. We have one heck of a sales team. Don't be afraid of them. They're good people.
Yeah. And I think it's something I want to say is that they're not really strictly a sales team.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry. That's a good point.
Our sales team is really involved in customer success and customer support and really advocating for the customers to help them get their products. They're not just trying to sell you something.
No, as a matter of fact, the way that it works is they will, obviously they are trying to sell, they're trying to find new customers mm-hmm. and to get them to use the platform. But once they use the platform, they're staying with them and mm-hmm. they're mm-hmm. continuing to like, hey, is everything working well? Are you satisfied? Do you have any problems or anything we can help you with? Like, and then, you know, they become a point of contact when they do need resources from the factory to do additional things. And it's, mm-hmm. it's a great team. Really happy to have them.
Yeah, I guess speaking of teams and people, I kind of divided this episode into a few different sections. That being, people, machines, and processes.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk about people. I know you can't specifically talk about specific people.
Sure.
But I guess, can you speak to, has the team grown a lot? I know when I go in there, there's just a lot new of new faces
So sure. Yeah, we definitely have been, I say a lot of hiring for us is like hiring 3-4 people, you know, but we have done that and kind of spread them all out into all different areas and cross-train them on a lot of different things. It's been working out great. Hired a lot of young people, and there's always this tendency towards like, oh, kids these days, they don't know how to work hard and yada, yada, yada. It's like, I don't buy that. Like, they know how to work hard. Like, they just need coaching, and if they're not working hard, they just don't understand yet. When you just show them, and then they're like, oh, I get it. All right, this is how I do it. And I don't know. It's, And they're just sponges. They just soak it all up and learn so quick. And there's strengths there, you know. And we've had a lot of good success with hiring out of high school. And actually over on Circuit Hub side, hiring some, you know, engineering level people. And it's been good. We've grown quite a bit. I'm trying to remember. We had three shifts over at Circuit Hub's factory for a while now.
Yeah, right? Quite a while.
Yep, quite a while. So
I would say well over a year now.
Yeah, okay. Well, Worthington has been trying to build a second shift, at least. It's a little trickier just because of our scale is a little bit larger and the space is just, anyway, it's been a little bit trickier for us to pull it off quite right. But we have been pulling it off, but we've been growing a second shift, which has been going well, sort of at like critical work centers. And I can speak more about that a little bit when we get into processes, but I'd rather follow our outline here because sure. The next thing in the outline is machines. So, we're coming up now on our 1 year anniversary of having our new pick and place machines, which seems crazy to me. It seems like we just got them. and in podcast land, we sort of did just get them. I think we've only had like 4 or 5 episodes since we got them.
No, surely we've had more than that.
But yeah, so all the anniversary means to me is that we don't have a warranty anymore. That's all that.
Oh no.
but also like we're finally building confidence. You know, I think we've had pretty good confidence all summer, really late spring and summer, but it takes a long time to get there. Like it's hard to really express the complexity of these machines because it's so much more than just a machine. It's like all these processes outside of the machine. It's like the way you program them, the way you prep them, the way you load them, and how it touches on every aspect of your business. It's really hard to fully articulate just how involved these machines are and their software is in every aspect of our business, like every aspect. The database of devices and how we use that data and the database of like panel dimensions and where else we pull that from and how we like it's everywhere. It was just so complex and yeah, it was overwhelming, but we're finally at the point where we've totally independently of myself or anybody else at the company, the SMT team came up with a great idea where they rotate out once a week on all of the various aspects of the SMT area. And what that means is they sort of like musical chairs it. So like every week they just shift over one. So, you know, if Lisa is running the MyData machine week one and Ivana is running the Fuji machine that week and Chris is doing more setup that week, well, then the next week they all just shift over one. Now Lisa is running the Fuji machine, Ivana's doing setup and Chris is running the My100. And then the next week they shift over one. And now Chris is doing the Fuji machine and Lisa is doing the setup and Ivana's running the MyData machine. So the cross training is like getting super, super strong and everybody's really comfortable with each machine, which has been a great experience. And they just identified that need and just tackled it on their own. Yeah. It's awesome. We have such an amazing team. Like literally, it's unbelievable. I mean, we work very hard. Like I say we, like, but I mean we as in collectively the whole company work hard to make an amazing team, you know. See episode, what was it with David Mulherin? It was all about that. But yeah, it's working out great. Programming is much faster now. Like the database is getting very large. We have some custom software we've written that have helped speed up our programming process, which is nice. So it's just firing on all cylinders. And so now the great thing is like we had when the day one, when those machines arrived, we had the accuracy, we had the speed, everything that those machines would deliver for us was already there. It was the process that was a mess because we didn't know what we were doing yet. And so now the process is there and we're getting the accuracy and the speed still, and it's just firing on all cylinders. And it's just, it's so exciting. And as listeners might've heard in a previous episode, we're looking to sell our MyData equipment. Not that there's anything wrong with it. Like I said, we're using it every single day, but we just want to standardize on one platform. There's just a lot of different reasons why that's important. And so if you're interested, give us a call. It might be sold already, but yeah, it's super exciting. So very happy to have that moving.
And I see you have, we now have a dock.
We have a dock.
Yeah.
Yes. And I really hope this is a word that translates well into other languages.
shipping dock.
A shipping dock,
not a dock. Not a doctor.
Yeah, no, not a doctor. Not like a port in a marina.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, a shipping dock. One that
Worthington Circuit Hub yacht.
Yeah, an 18-wheeler or a semi-truck, a tractor-trailer, a lorry would back into. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of all the different terms. Yeah, so we can unload like very large equipment now. The way that it used to work is we used to have to, we would hire a rigger, which that's another word I hope translates well into other languages. Basically, they were just professionals at moving big stuff. Like this is all they do is move big, heavy things. And so they would show up with their trailers that they could literally drive a forklift off of on, you know, the trailer would lower to the ground so they could drive a forklift off and then it would pick back up and then they would pick up the machine and pull it off the trailer with it. And then they would use the fork truck to bring it into the building. But now that we have access to the building's loading dock, well, I should point out we have the whole building now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we used to share our building with another, tenant.
Tenant. Yeah.
Yeah. After talking about the Christopher Nolan movie, now I'm like, I got the...
I'm the one that's supposed to be forgetting words, Chris.
Yes. Tenant, not tenet.
Yes.
Yeah. Those do sound very similar with an American accent. So now that they're gone, we have access to the entire building. We've expanded our whole space. So we used to be in, I don't know, 6,000 square feet, maybe 8,000 square feet. And now we're like 24, if I had to guess, something like that. It's a lot of space. So we have a lot of room for expansion. Might not be 24. I'm not 20. I don't know. I'm bad with like estimating these things. And it's bad enough. Like our listeners in Europe are like, feet? What? Who measures things with their feet? I don't know how many square meters that is. I'm sorry. But yeah, so that's been exciting to have access to that space. So we've been able to spread out more. And that spreading out has enabled a lot of things, which again, we'll get into in process a little bit. We got a new stencil printer. Have you seen our new stencil printer, Melissa?
I haven't.
Oh, it's pretty. You need to go see it. It's really pretty. It actually is like aesthetically pretty. You know how like cars can be pretty? Like yeah, you look like at the a machine Porsche.
Itself, like the-
yeah. Yeah, the machine itself is just very pretty. You walk along and you see a Ferrari, you're going to be like, ooh, that's a pretty machine, right? And this is literally just a pretty machine. It's nice to look at. But it is so crazy accurate. And it has something called closed loop feedback, which we did have a whole episode on stencil printing. And I think I touched on it. But basically what it means is there's a machine right after the stencil printer that measures the results from the stencil printing process. Mm-hmm. It measures the accuracy, how far shifted it is in the X and the Y dimensions, how much it is skewed, how much it rotated the stencil on the board itself. And what it can do is it can report back to the stencil printer. And so every time it does a print, it says, hey, this is how far off you were. Mm-hmm. And then the next print, it'll adjust it by... Wow. You know, an appropriate amount. It's not one for one. There's like a fancy algorithm to know just how much to adjust, but it just makes so your print results are like perfect every single time. It's amazing. So super happy to have that. The other thing is it can handle really thin boards. Mm. So our old stencil printer, when we got like 0.4 millimeter, 0.6 millimeter thick boards, we had to put them on dummy boards. We had to literally tape them to thick 1.6 millimeter boards and then process them that way. Now we can handle them like automatically, just put them right in and it handles it, which is cool.
And larger panels. Is that correct?
Larger panels. Yep. We had one customer that kept telling us like, hey, we'd love to do business with you guys, but our boards are this big. I told the sales guy, I said, Connor, as soon as we get this machine online, I'm going to let you know that we can accept their orders. And we let them know and we adjusted our software. And so now if your board didn't quote with Circuit Hub before because it was too large, it might quote now because we can handle larger boards now, which is exciting. And we might be able to handle larger. So that stencil printer is now not the limiting factor in the maximum board size we can handle. Now it is our pick and place machine because we actually bought the compact version of the pick and place machine, not the regular size version. But probably our next machine will buy the regular size version so that we can handle even larger boards. Maybe. We'll see. But then we can handle up to 710 millimeters, which is like 26 inches, 28 inches, something like that. I think it's 28 inches. That's a big board.
It's a big board.
That's a really big board. That's a coffee table. So that's been super exciting. Let's see. What else is on our list, Melissa?
I've got a magazine unloader.
Yes. Okay. So a magazine unloader is, well, what's a magazine? I would love to have a whole episode on automated board handling and like what all these machines do. But basically, you load a vertical tower, a small, like handheld vertical tower. It's like the size of like a, say like a microwave oven, about the size of a microwave oven, maybe a little tall, like a tall microwave oven. If you took the footprint of a microwave oven and just made it a little taller, that's about how big these magazines are. And then you fill them with your circuit boards as they come out of the reflow oven, if they're a double-sided board. So when you finish building the first side and you flip them over and you put them into this magazine. Now you carry this entire magazine of, I think it holds like 40 boards, something like that. And you bring it to the very front of your SMT line now. And what this machine does is it has a little pokey stick. I call it the pokey stick.
And very technical.
It's very technical. The little pokey stick, it pokes the circuit boards one at a time and pushes them onto the assembly line. So what we used to have to do is we had to put them on racks and then we would hand load our double-sided boards onto our assembly line one at a time. And it was time consuming, you know, mm-hmm. And considering when you pay pretty high labor rates here in the United States, you know, that becomes a pretty significant expense. If your labor rates are lower overseas, oftentimes the labor rates are significantly less than the United States. It's not as critical to have this level of automation, but we invested in it. It was not cheap, but it'll probably pay for itself in like a couple of years, maybe less. So super exciting to have that. Yeah, we'll definitely have an episode dedicated to board handling. I actually think that might be more interesting than it sounds, Melissa. Okay.
Okay.
All right, what's next? What's next?
The URSA?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. So we may have talked about this in the past. We'll definitely have a full episode dedicated to this, but we bought I'll call it a big boy selective soldering machine. Mm. This is actually a machine designed for a certain German automotive manufacturer. And I'll give you a hint. The machine is called the 3 Series. It is super, super cool. So we have a new selective soldering machine coming online soon. What I'm excited about this machine, I'll get into more details about it in another episode, but what I'm excited about this machine is it has a proper fluxing station, preheating station, and soldering station. What does that mean for our customers? That means we can get incredibly good hole fill, even on really thick, high layer count PCBs. Like we should have no trouble filling the holes on these PCBs now, which is a challenge with a lot of lower end selective soldering machines, and frankly, almost impossible by hand. Like you have to, I mean, you can do it by hand, but you have to have special equipment, preheating and stuff like this to do it right. So very exciting. We do not have that hooked up yet. I'm actually issuing a purchase order as soon as we're done with this recording to our electricians to get the power run to it. We're waiting for quotes back from our ventilation supplier to get ventilation done. We have a plumber. We're still waiting for one quote back from a plumber to get the plumbing quotes, to get the air and the nitrogen connected to it. It's a big machine. So we got a lot of work to do still. But yep, that's coming online soon.
Cool. Let's see. Oh, I added this one because I'm not even sure if this is new, but I saw it in the factory yesterday and I was like, this is new to me. So, which is the X-ray part counting machine.
Oh, yes. Yes. That for sure we have to have a dedicated episode on that.
That is a cool machine.
It's a super cool machine. There's a lot to it. Basically, it uses X-rays to count parts, and it's unbelievable.
What?
It's so cool. It's so cool. Let's have a dedicated episode on that.
All right.
We'll table that one for later. But basically what that means for our customers, super, super, super accurate part counts on your inventory when we're holding the inventory for you. What else we got?
I think that's all the machines.
Okay.
Now let's talk about some processes.
I feel like there's
Are there new? That's all you have on the list.
Okay. I'm checking my list. I'm going to pull it up. I feel like there's something. Oh, yes. Okay. I just added one. This is probably because I just added one more thing just before we started recording. We have a new conveyor. Again, we're talking automated board handling for catching boards out of our reflow oven. Mm. This thing, I... Okay. So I had... Talk about pet peeves, Melissa. Before I came to Worthington, I've mentioned it on the Getting to Know Chris and Melissa episode. I had been into and out of dozens, if not well over 100 different electronics manufacturing facilities in my career before coming to Worthington Assembly. And one thing I kept seeing over and over and over and over, and I mean, holy 50%, maybe honestly, maybe even as high as 80% of the businesses I went into did not have anything at the end of the reflow oven to catch the boards. Mm-hmm. We may have talked about this before because it always blows my mind. People would just stand there. They'd be like, "Hey, Jim, here come the boards," you know, and they would stand there and catch the boards. The boards are hot. Okay. So it hurts to catch these boards. You don't want B, if nobody's there, you know where they go? The floor. They go in the floor is where they go. Okay. We call that the drop test. Or they would just set up a table and they would build a ramp out of cardboard. I'm not kidding. Wow. I'm not kidding about this, by the way. I've seen this. It would be one thing if I saw it once. I saw it multiple times. I probably saw it at least five or more times. They would literally just set up a table and they would use packing tape to tape a ramp out of the reflow oven to catch the boards. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So one of the very first things I did when I came to Worthington Assembly is we didn't have a proper reflow oven. We bought a proper reflow oven. And around the exact same time that we bought this reflow oven, we bought a used conveyor to catch the boards. And now this is like a big, it looks like the conveyor that you use at a grocery store, like a big flat, wide black belt that just, catches boards coming out of the reflow oven. And it just never stops. It just progressively turns so that it catches the boards. But the problem with that, as you can imagine, is there's an end to that conveyor. And once it reaches the end, an alarm goes off and it says, "Hey, you know, I've stopped. And so you got to come grab the boards. I can't catch anything more." This new one will actually have sensors on it that will only turn on when it detects a board that is about to exit the reflow oven. Oh. So, and then once it has exited the reflow oven, it will turn off. So it'll actually queue up the boards as they come out, and it should save a lot of walking around and emergency having to catch boards and stuff like that. It gives you way more time to get down there and grab the boards and rack them up or put them in a magazine. Yeah. Very excited about that. So as you can tell, we definitely have to have an episode. If I haven't said it already, have I said it already, Melissa? On automated board handling. Just kidding. I know I've said it. All right. Process.
Process. We talked a little bit about this.
Okay, go ahead.
You did. Talked a little bit about this already with regards to the S&T team.
Yeah. Yep, that's an example. So that's an example of a process we've changed where, we rotate each team member. We also do cool things like we focus on doing our changeovers, like an F1 pit stop, where legitimately, we will, when we can tell it's the end of the last panel is about to come out, somebody will make a bunch of noise. Whoever's the person operating the machine, like, "Okay, ready for the changeover." Like, they'll make themselves heard. And everybody kind of drops what they're doing and comes over. We change out the nozzle nest. We change out the feeder carts. We change out the program. We empty the waste bins. We empty the dump bins for the reject parts. There's a lot of different things. And then when you have four or five people all attack it at once, you can do your changeovers in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's a process we've changed over, which is pretty cool. It doesn't always, we're not always able to pull it off as well as we'd like to, because not everybody is always there when we need them to. But generally speaking, we do try to work together as a team, and it's really sweet. Okay, so other process. Oh, having more space. I touched on this a little bit earlier. Just having more space just makes things more efficient in general. You have to make sure that you're more efficient enough to outweigh the expense of the extra space, which is tricky. And I'm not sure that we've achieved that yet, but at least we have room to expand and increase our capacity, increase our headcount without like being on top of each other anymore. But it just like, it makes it so that you can have like, instead of a workbench that is sort of cross-disciplinary, where this workbench has to be used for A, B, and C operations, you can have three workbenches for operation A, operation B, and operation C, and they can be dedicated to that. And you don't have to tear down and reset up that workbench to do a different operation. You can do things like, for example, when we got our new Fuji machines, we couldn't fit them in the building without taking out old pick and place machines. So like it was a really painful transition because we lost all this capacity practically overnight while we learned how to use the new equipment. Whereas now we're going to get more Fuji equipment. We're not going to take out our old equipment first. We have the space to bring in the new equipment, get up to speed with it, make sure everything's going well, and then make the switch over and bring out the old equipment, you know? That was, Melissa, that was painful. Oh, it really was. That was a very stressful time in my life. I'll be honest. As far as like work is concerned and personal life, that was definitely the most stressful period of my career, that transition. Which is why I understand why people don't want to change platforms.
Yeah.
You know?
But you did good, Chris.
Why, thank you. Let's hope customers agree. let's see, what else you got here, Melissa?
I guess looking at, so what were the bottlenecks back in, you know, April versus I guess the machines have probably played a huge role in how they've changed.
Yeah. So bottleneck was almost always SMT back in, you know, before the Fuji machines and still in April while we were still getting up to speed with them. Those pick and place machines, you know, they just, you know, it's, here's what it is. Whenever you have a work center that requires a lot of training and has finite resources, like a pick and place machine, you tend to find a bottleneck, right? Because only certain people know how to operate it, because it takes months and months and honestly, if I'm being honest, years before you become really comfortable with it. And you have limited resources. There's only so many machines. There's only so many feeders. There's only so many nozzles, right? You tend to find a bottleneck versus, let's say, an operation like depaneling boards or you know, bubble wrapping boards to ship. The training in those work centers, I wouldn't say it's trivial. It's not overnight. You're not going to train somebody immediately, but it's not going to take years to train somebody. And all you really need is a workbench and some inexpensive tools, like a V-scoring machine is going to be a couple $1,000s, you know, or a pair of pliers if it's mouse bites, you know, like it's not super expensive. So you can expand your capacity in those work centers. You cannot expand your capacity easily in a pick and place machine work center, or the other one that we used to hit us quite a bit is our selective soldering work centers. Mm-hmm. So by building out a second shift that's focused on those work centers of selective soldering and pick and place, we have dramatically expanded the overall capacity of the entire factory because the rest of the operations can grow more easily than those work centers can. I'm generalizing too much because like inspection, for example, is very difficult to grow. What helps there is the fact that these machines are way more accurate than our old machines. I think those old machines were just not accurate because they were old. I'm sure they were very accurate brand new, but they're just like, the boards just come out perfect every single time. Like we built this order recently for a customer, and I don't think it was 10,000 boards. It was the high thousands. It could have been like 6,000, 7,000, maybe 8,000 boards. It was the high thousands. And I want to say it was like 50 or 60 placements per board, maybe more. I think we had 7 defects on the entire run. Wow. And I'm not even confident it was all pick and place. I think maybe some of it might've even been like somebody sticking their thumb on, you know, a board before they put it in the oven. These machines are super accurate. So when you have super accurate machines and you have 3D AOI, which offloads a tremendous amount of manual inspection work, it makes that inspection process less of a bottleneck. It can still become a bottleneck because, frankly, it is harder to teach a person to become a high quality inspector, you know, person who really understands what a finished product is. It's harder to train that person to do that than it is to train them on a pick and place machine. It just is. Mm-hmm. It just is. So that can quickly become a bottleneck, but we're working hard to get ahead of it. What else we got, Melissa?
I added this in here just because I guess I wasn't sure. So how are things on like the part shortage nowadays?
I think it's better. Mm-hmm. I think it's better. I don't think we're out of the woods yet. I know we're still having, like, we're still, you know, talking to customers and saying, hey, look, we found this at a broker. This is the only place we're able to find it. Are you okay with us buying from this broker? Here's the details on it. We would never just buy from a broker without disclosing it to a customer. Mm-hmm. We always, 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 like, if we're buying parts and not telling you where we're buying them from, it's because we're buying them from authorized distributors, DigiKey, Newark, Avna, Arrow, Mauser, right? But if we have to get them from a non-authorized reseller, we will disclose that immediately. I think we're doing less of that. I think it's still happening, but I think we're doing less of it. But because I don't get involved in that super much, I don't know that I'm in the best position to answer that question. It's also, I think our customers are sourcing their own materials more often than they used to.
Yeah.
Yes. Which
that's a whole another topic.
That's a can of worms I can't even get into today. Man. We definitely should have, I think it would be great to have a customer on the show to talk about their experience, for us to reflect our own experience about what it's like to
kind consign. Of have their perspective.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be really, really nice. Yeah, I agree. So maybe we'll line that up for a future episode, but it feels better, but I'm pretty sure it's not totally better yet. I don't think it's pre-pandemic levels of part availability. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But yeah, that's mostly what's new. Oh, and I got a puppy. She's adorable.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh so my much god, she's so tiny too.
So if listeners aren't already familiar with my wife and I have had pugs since we got married, and we had to put down our 17-year-old pug in April, May, somewhere around there, and we had already had another one, but we could tell that we would like to have two so that they could entertain each other and get some energy out, you know, and not have a lonely dog. Dogs don't like to be lonely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my wife and I are busy people. So we got a second one. Oh my God, she's so cute. We got her. She was 2.25 pounds. She was tiny.
Oh my God.
She was so tiny. I give you permission to include pictures of her in the show notes, Melissa.
Oh my gosh. She's like this. She was the size of a foot.
Not even.
Yeah.
Like the size of a hand. So tiny. Now she's maybe the size of a foot. Yeah. And our feet have found her one too many times. Poor thing. Yeah. Little squeaks.
I know. I brought my baby in when you brought your puppy in. I was like, oh my God, my baby's huge.
humans are slightly larger than pugs. Let's be honest. Yeah. Yeah. And when she was born, she was probably, I would assume newborn pugs are half a pound or less. Like, really tiny, really, really tiny. Because the mother gave birth to 7. So, mother. I mean, if they're even a pound, she's not carrying around 7 pounds in her belly. She can't. That's crazy. Pugs are only
how
like
much do pugs weigh?
15, 16, a female pug, maybe 16 pounds.
Yeah, like
you know,
half
like
of their weight. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way they could be a full pound. So, she must have been super tiny versus a baby is anywhere from what, 5 to like 10 pounds, you know, a human baby. Mm-hmm. Oh, poor mothers, that 10 pounds, that's a lot of poundage with a baby. Yeah. Let's not get into that.
Yeah, that's
but yeah, it's exciting stuff. That's a personal thing, but she's so cute. And I can't wait to finish recording so I can go play with her. I'm sure you're saying the same.
Oh, about my baby.
Yeah.
Yes. I think she's hopefully asleep right now. So.
Oh, okay. Let's let her sleep. Let's not. I hope you're wearing headphones.
So we should have been whispering for the whole podcast. No.
this is the ASMR episode of Pick Place Podcast.
Oh, God.
All right. Okay. Beautiful. Anything else, Melissa?
Yes. Before we stop recording, we of course have to do our favorite part.
Oh, of course. Before we did the pet peeve, I wanted to know if there was anything else like actually boring to talk about before we got to the exciting thing.
No, just I'm ready for the excitement.
All right. This is the cherry on top of the sundae. Let's go.
And yeah, so I guess I'll be providing the pet peeve this week. I've been waiting a while.
Nice.
For this one. It's very random. Probably most of our pet peeves are.
Yeah, they are.
But with a baby, as you might expect, I've been doing a lot of laundry.
My goodness, I can only imagine.
So my pet peeve is I don't know if this is just only the washing machines that I've interacted with in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever had this when it good. Says
I that love appliance pet peeves.
There's 1 minute left. But then it's literally like 15 minutes longer. And then you're just standing there. You're like, okay, 1 minute, I'll wait here, you know.
Yes.
And I'll just wait for it to finish. And then you're just standing there and you're standing there and you're like, oh my God, this is definitely not 1 minute.
This is way more than a minute. Like you're looking at your watch. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just all the time you've wasted just waiting for your washing.
It's like watching the status bar on a computer at 99%.
Yeah.
You're like, really? Are you really at 99%?
Yeah. Have you had that happen?
Yes, of course I have. Machines? Yes. Okay. On a washing machine specifically. Yes, I have. Yes.
Why?
Because I will be like, oh, I'm right here. I'll throw it in the dryer as soon as it's done.
Yeah. You know,
this is great.
Perfect timing.
I know. Because otherwise it's going to sit and I'm going to forget about it. Yeah, exactly.
But why? Can someone tell me why that it does that? Why isn't it accurate? So.
Well, I really hope that an engineer from Whirlpool or somebody is listening to this and calls us up and lets us know. What brand washing machine do you have?
I think it's a Whirlpool.
Whirlpool, yeah, they're real popular in the States. Have you ever heard of Speed Queen?
No.
Okay. Speed Queen's where it's at.
Okay.
So when you go to a laundromat, almost all of those are Speed Queens.
Okay.
And they make an at-home version of these things. And that's what my wife and I picked up is the Speed Queen. They are significantly more expensive than like an LG or a Samsung or a Whirlpool, like triple. But we found ours on Facebook Marketplace. So we spent a lot less than that, but they are amazing. Yeah. And
why?
And you know what I'm going to do?
Do they wash the clothes better or are they speedier?
So I will say they are speedier for one. Mm-hmm. This particular washing machine gets the clothes like super, super, super dry. So you're using less energy to dry them.
Yeah.
You can also define the fill. So one of the things that's happened, which I think is great. I think it's important that it happened is, perhaps it's regulation. I don't know, but washing machines auto-calculate how much water to use for the load now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're conservative with that because they're trying to conserve water. And, you know, here I am in Massachusetts in like the mountains and I have like a 400 foot deep artesian well. Like I don't have water problems, but you know, in cities, they got water problems. And in Los Angeles, they got water problems. You know, you live in Phoenix, you got water problems. So I think it's good that, you know, we're conserving water in general. But this particular style, you can define how much you can put, you know, one little sock in your thing and you can say, fill that washing machine to the brim and it will. So the nice thing about that is sometimes you do need to override it. Like you happen to know these are many people in the audience know that I like to brew beer. And when I use the rags from brewing, they get really dirty. Like it's a messy process to brew beer and these rags get really, really dirty. If I had a small amount of water in, you know, a conservative amount of water in the washing machine, there's simply like, I feel like there's simply not enough water to saturate, you know, like I'm going to saturate that water immediately with how much dirt is in these rags versus if I can give it a little bit more fill, it will do a better job of getting these rags clean for me. So that's another example. Plus they're just built like a tank. They're so heavy. I recommend movers if you get them. They're so heavy. I was like, this was a bad idea, moving this myself with my wife.
Oh, wow. Is it in your basement?
No, thankfully we have it on our first floor. So it's just a couple steps.
That's good.
Pulling in our garage, up a couple steps, and we have a downstairs half bath, and it's in the half bath downstairs. So I didn't have to like wheel it downstairs or upstairs or anything like that. But they're heavy, and they're like all stainless steel. There's no plastic anywhere to be found on them. They're heavy duty machines. Yeah. It's like it's overkill, but they last like forever. Like you can get 20, 30 years out of these things. So,
they're designed to be used 24/7 almost.
They're designed to be used 24/7 by people who don't care about about treating them well, you know? Like you get your Whirlpool you have at home, you're not going to slam the door. You go to a laundromat, you're just like, just shove it closed. I don't care if it's full, just shove it closed, you know? And yeah, so they're designed to take abuse. That's the other thing. So if you find them on Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or something like this, or whatever is your local, you know, marketplace du jour, I highly recommend a Speed Queen. Yeah. But now, Melissa, this is going to drive me crazy. I'm going to be like looking at the countdown timer on our Speed Queen, and it's going to say like, 29 minutes to go. And it's like, okay, I'm going to set my watch for like 27 minutes, you know, I'm going to set an alarm for 27. I'm going to walk over and I'm going to watch this thing. I'll do some follow-up. Okay. I'll let you know if this
Speed Queen does actually.
I will let you know if it ends at a minute or if it goes on for like an extra five, I will let you know.
That's what all of our listeners should do. We'll just take a poll.
I agree.
Based on what brand of washing machine you have and how long it actually takes for your...
We're the new consumer reports of of the world. I love it. That's a good pet peeve, Melissa. That's a good one.
Thanks. I feel better.
I've got a few queued up. I got to get off my chest. So maybe in upcoming episodes. We got a bunch of episodes.
Keep you on schedule so you can get rid of your pet peeves.
Please do. Please do. I need to be kept on schedule. Otherwise, I will get distracted with all these other projects I want to accomplish. So, great. Thanks, Melissa. As always, please email us contact@pickplacepodcast.com or X us at Circuit Hub.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Or at WSM. I don't know what the verb is. Send us a message on X. Send us a message on X. At Circuit Hub or at W Assembly. It's bad. It's Twitter, okay? Tweet at us.
Yeah, okay.
And as always, we like to just remind everybody, if you have a friend you think would enjoy this show, please let them know. We'd love to have them.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Pick Place podcast. If you like what you heard, consider following us on your favorite podcast app. And please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Melissa.